This podcast is a copyrighted production of Radio America and is not intended for broadcast. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey. For the next hour, join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. Finances, raising children, and dealing with your husband through his tough times and yours. This is the place to be as Maria and her guests bring you a wealth of information on all of these topics. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary Donlin in for Maria Bailey, and it is my pleasure to be with you for another fantastic episode of Mom Talk Radio. We'll be talking to experts and moms and mompreneurs. It's going to be a great show lined up for you. First, I want to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, Pre-Mama. Pre-Mama at drinkpremama.com. You can find information about this fabulous prenatal vitamin that you can drink. Instead of choking down the horrible horse pills, this is a prenatal vitamin powder, and you mix it in your favorite cold beverage. So you can put it in your cranberry juice, your orange juice, even smoothies, even a smoothie, which I know lots of moms love to eat, take in the morning, make one, add your Pre-Mama, and you're getting a day's worth of your prenatal vitamin without the awful horse pill and choking it down and gagging on it, especially if you're trying to conceive or pregnant and you're hormonal anyway. You don't want to have to mess with the horse pill. So go to drinkpremama.com, and you can even request a couple of samples if you want to try it first. It's also available at amazon.com, Bye Bye Baby stores, Target stores has a complete version that is orange flavored, and it's just a fabulous alternative for you. So I encourage you to check it out, and also follow Drink Pre-Mama on Facebook and Twitter, because they post recipes and prenatal health information and tips and kind of thing. So make sure to check it out. And then I wanted to mention too, so May, of course, is soon upon us, and I can't believe it's already the end of April. And May means, of course, Mother's Day, which we are going to, of course, celebrate in a big, big way. But I wanted to bring your attention to Mom's Night Out. And a few years ago, Maria started Mom's Night Out as a way for moms to celebrate other than the traditional Sunday Mother's Day celebrations, because a lot of moms will say and ask, you probably know this and other moms too, that you're busy preparing for your own mothers, your grandmothers, your aunties, anybody, any mom who's special to you, you're probably doing all the celebration planning and organizing. And so you're pretty much not having a Mother's Day celebration of your own. Many of us too, of course, get some to sleep in or breakfast in bed, which is awesome. But if you don't and you want to celebrate with other moms in your neighborhood, check out momsnightout.com. You'll find locations of parties, events, community events at, let's say, malls and restaurants. There's a lot going on that day. It's May 7th is National Moms Night Out. That's the Thursday before the official Mother's Day holiday. And I encourage you to check it out. It's really a lot of fun. It's been going on now for, I think this is the sixth year that we've done National Moms Night Out. And if you can't make it to an event, there is a Twitter party scheduled for that night, May 7th. I think it's going to be 7 p.m., but definitely follow Moms Night Out on Twitter and Facebook. Actually, Maria, of course, will also be tweeting out from at Mom Talk Radio on Twitter. So we'll be updating the Moms Night Out social media pages, and Maria will also be sending out tweets, and we'll post it all over the place. So it's a really fun time. Again, it's a time for you to forget the laundry, forget the cooking and the homework help and putting the kids to bed. You get to go out with other moms on Thursday before Mother's Day. And also too, if you go to myprintly.com, that's myprintly.com, you'll see great party ideas, invitations, decorations, craft ideas. So if you're going to plan your own mom's night out, which you can do, just throw out a text or an email to a few friends in the neighborhood or your mommy group and have your own party, there's great ideas at myprintly.com. So definitely check that out, because it's an adorable website. I checked it out before the show started, and it's really a cute way to get some easy craft ideas to make your party a success. And another idea is, whether it's for a mom's night out or a kid's party, card games are really fun. It's a great way to get some conversation, laughter, and experiences going. And bicycle playing cards provide the perfect opportunity to bring your friends together, your friends and family, and form connections. So bicycle playing cards are actually going to be in some mom's night out party kits next week. So make them an essential addition to your event that you're hosting. And you can follow Bicycle at facebook.com/bicyclecards and on Twitter at the same, at Bicycle Cards. So thank you so much to Bicycle for being a fabulous sponsor of Mom's Night Out. And if you're planning a play date, moms, you'll want to hear from our next guest. If you're planning a play date, you want to hear from our next guest who has taken the work out of planning a play date, next on Mom Talk Radio.
Even super moms need a little advice. Here's yours. More of Mom Talk Radio.
Well, you know what it's like to try to plan a play date, especially if it's toddlers, but even if it's up to age 12, we've got the guests who are going to tell you all about it, and they've taken the work out of planning a play date. I'm pleased to welcome Cam Bowman and Nicole Boudry, who are the founders of Avery and Austin. Check it out at averyandaustin.com, and I'll let them tell you what it's all about. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you just came up with this idea because you saw a need for within your own community and your own experiences. So tell us a little bit about Avery and Austin, Cam.
So Avery and Austin was created by Nicole and myself. We were sitting around one day just talking about how much we love to do crafts with our kids, but we don't like to buy all these supplies, bring them home, and then have a bunch of stuff laying around the house or have a need to place to store it, which neither one of us do have. And so we were like, gosh, wouldn't it be great just to have something drop on your doorstep, something that has everything you need for the perfect play date? You know, you have all your craft supplies, a snack for the kids, and something for me, because, you know, I'm putting on this play date. As much as I love it, I want a little surprise for me, too.
Oh,
and
cute.
So that's kind of how we got started, and we just evolved from there. We thought, wow, what could we do this? And absolutely we could. And that's how we started our perfect playdate box from Avery and Austin. You get
awesome.
Everything you need. It's hand-packed. You find items to do a fun craft or activity for two kids. So it's not just one child, it's two. So you can have, you know, siblings have a playdate, cousins, brothers, sisters, friends and neighbors, everybody. And one of the other markets that's recently come about is grandparents. Grandparents love our box because they have everything they need for that great summertime play date that's coming up, and they don't have to think about it. It's right there for them.
That's fabulous. I love the idea. I've done enough play dates with three kids that I know sometimes. And I actually have the drawer in my laundry room that's full of all the stuff that was left over from me running to the craft store and buying too much. And, you know, so Nicole, when did you start the company?
We launched less than a month ago now, but we have been behind the scenes working for a good 3 months.
Oh, wonderful.
Set up and, yeah.
Right. So it's, so tell us how it works, Nicole. So I'm having a play date next week with my 8-year-old. What steps do I take to get a Avery and Austin box?
Well, you would visit our website and you could choose a plan. You can either buy one box or you can get a 3-month or a 6-month subscription. So what a lot of moms are doing is the box will arrive on their doorstep and they're tucking it away. And they're keeping it on hand for when they have the next play date. So, because they know that they can have a friend over and they can just open the box and the kids can go at it. There's no planning. It's just ready to go, complete with snacks.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. I love that. So every box is obviously going to be different. Let's say you sign up for a 3 or 6 month subscription. Every box is different. And is there a hint as to what you give for the mom? Because I love that part too.
Yeah. It's each month has a theme. So our first box was a bird theme. And so we had some bird houses and some bird seed theater kits. And the mom got a bracelet that we had commissioned with the word fly stamped on it. The mother's gift ties in our second month with a gardening box. And in the box, there were two gifts for the mom. There was a mud mask to kind of tie in with that dirt theme and a really great lip balm.
That's adorable, Mudbath. That's adorable. What a great idea. So, again, Cam, you come up with this idea because you just had your own idea because it was a brainstorming because you saw the need in the mom community.
Right. And, you know, and that's, you know, both Nicole and I are huge in our communities and our parenting and the online world. And I think all of us really struggle with wanting to do more for our kids. We really want to unplug and just kind of get the kids away from the TV, get them outside doing things, getting them, you know, hands on making something, creating something. And I think we all have a little struggle with a little bit of that mom guilt once in a while. And we just want to feel like we're doing something better for our kids. And I think that is the root of this. And we're really evolving our boxes into like, how can we do more and, you know, educate our kids? So, you know, Nicole came up with a great idea for our bird box, you know, of putting together bird facts, you know, letting them know about, you know, what's going on with the bird environment and how they can make it a little bit better by providing a bird feeder and, you know, feeding the birds in a proper way. And, you know, with our next month, the gardening, just the, you know, it was Earth Day this month, so we thought this was a perfect time to get out there and get dirty and plant a little bit for the spring months. So, you know, we definitely keep those thoughts in mind when we're packaging these boxes and picking out the ideas for the next month.
That's just fun. I'm just fabulous. I just love this idea because it's also, as working moms now, you two with a successful company, or at least the launch of what I think is going to be a successful company, you know what it's like to not have a lot of time. And this just puts it all right out there. It's all ready to go, right? Plug and play.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, and that it, the hostess gift on our end, that little gift for mom just kind of sets us aside from most other subscription box services that you could get out there, and that we're set up for two. So, you know, it's, we both have two children of our own, and it's great that I just opened the box and my older one is actually helping the younger one, you know, facilitate this play date. And I just kind of stand back and have my coffee and watch this take place or do what I need to do. And it's just a great resource.
Great. So tell, where can we find, it's averyandaustin.com, A-B-E-R-Y, and Austin, like Austin, Texas. And then are there social media sites where our listeners can follow you?
Yes, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter and Facebook as Avery and Austin as well.
Wonderful. Best of luck, ladies. I love the idea. This link to Avery and Austin will be on momtalkradio.com next week. And we look forward to hearing about your success. When we return on Mom Talk Radio, it'll be the Spotlight on Moms with Sarah LaFontaine. We're shining the spotlight on moms on Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary Donlin in for Maria, and I'm speaking with Sarah LaFontaine, who is the mother of five children from 18 years old down to seven. So she is a busy mom, but she cooks with her kids, and the name of her blog is cookwithfivekids.blogspot.com, and she's on Twitter at cookwithfivekids. So Sarah, let's talk about it. Are we all foodies? We're foodies in our house. Are you foodies in your house?
We are all foodies, and actually my oldest son, who's 18, wants to be a chef.
Oh, that's funny. So does mine.
Yeah, which is amazing. And he's liked cooking since he was two. He loves to find recipes. He watches videos and he creates the most incredible food. If there's a downside, it's that he doesn't clean up. So, you know, there's a delicious dinner, but 2 hours of cleanup afterwards, which is fun.
Well, that's true, because kids tend to make more of the mess. They use every pot in the drawer, you know. So that's great. Right. So for you, have a big range of children. I mean, 7-year-olds to 18. I have actually 8-year-old to 14,
right,
but only three kids too. So I won't get, you know, you're the bomb with five kids. But you say you started cooking with your kids when they were little.
Right. So I have four boys, and actually the youngest, the 7-year-old, is a girl, which makes it even more complicated because she really has nothing in common with everybody else. But we find that we really bond in the kitchen, and all my kids love to find recipes. They will check the ingredients, see what we need to buy, and then they want to be right in there measuring and cooking and creating things. And I've really taught them to check labels, help me find things that are healthy, trying to make the healthiest food possible that will still taste good. And honestly, the foods that the kids choose and make themselves are the foods that they'll eat and continue eating. And if I'm choosing the dinner and just making it, they're not very likely to like it. But if they put their hands in it and present it to everybody, you're pretty sure they're going to eat it.
Absolutely. The more they, more invested they are in it, the better they're going to, they'll like it and they'll eat it.
Exactly. But
what is your best tip, I guess, for cooking with kids, other than obviously letting them enjoy? Do you say, you know, do you narrow down their choice? Do you have the final say? Do you just let them have free range over what they can cook?
You know, I let them cook anything. I let them choose anything. And very often they will choose the dessert for dinner before they've chosen the main course, which is
That's exactly what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I am open to anything. And I also think my best tip is let them make a mess. You know, if you're worried about every measuring spoon getting lost and flour on the ceiling and the floor, you're not going to have fun. The kitchen is, you know, free territory. Everyone should have fun and not be worried about it. And my 7-year-old can crack eggs like no tomorrow only because I've been letting her do it. And so she's going to have a few shells in her scrambled eggs. She's going to say, that tasted terrible. I'm going to be more careful next time. But she can make scrambled eggs herself, and she loves to take orders for her brothers and who wants scrambled eggs for breakfast. And it's awesome. I mean,
I love it.
These kids will be able to take care of themselves and cook no matter when for anyone.
That's awesome. That sounds just perfect. And I subscribe to that theory too, almost the Julie Child cooking method in the kitchen. Like, you can make a mess, don't worry.
Exactly.
Clean it up later, you know.
Exactly.
Well, that's a great tip. We have a couple more minutes in the segment. Tell me really quickly, what you have two of your five have an autoimmune illness. How does that factor into the cooking?
So my 16 and 13-year-old have an illness called POTS, and that stands for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Okay.
And what that means is the blood does not flow correctly in their body, and just something as simple as getting up in the morning. So they're going from lying down to sitting up and then standing up, which you and me take for granted, and we just get up in the morning. When they do something simple like that, their heart rate can go up 100 beats a minute or even more just standing up in the morning. So it's been really, really hard. And this illness is very hard to diagnose because if you go to a regular doctor's appointment, they'll take your blood pressure sitting on the table. They will not ask you to lie down and take your blood pressure. And they definitely won't ask you to stand up and take your blood pressure. It's very hard to diagnose. And millions of people are suffering with this illness, and it takes years to figure out what it is because it's such a specific thing. You don't think about this. And they both are on a homebound education, which means the public school sends teachers to our house because they feel so terrible they can't get up and go to school like other kids, and their sleep schedule's messed up, their joints hurt, there's, you know, a whole list of things that bother them.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, I wish you the best of luck, and I'm inspired by you. As I tell my kids too, I mean, just stop complaining about the little stuff sometimes. Great advice. So nice talking to you, Sarah. And again, your blog is cookwithfivekids.blogspot.com, and your Twitter is cookwithfivekids. So thank you, Sarah. Now we'll shift the spotlight to a difficult but important topic. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and I'll chat with Natoya Green coming up next. We'll talk about common and uncommon signs of child abuse. Stay with us. This is Mom Talk Radio.
You're listening to a podcast from the Radio America Network. Find more podcasts of your favorite shows at radioamerica.org.
Mothers of America, this hour belongs to you. It's Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
This is Marion for Maria, and as I said before the break, we're switching to a difficult but very important topic, and it's Child Abuse Prevention Month in April, and I'm pleased to introduce a regular contributor to Mom Talk Radio, Natoya Green. Natoya is an expert on all family matters. She's had professional experience as a family law attorney, and her own personal experience is she is a mother to 4.5-year-old triplets. Yes, I said triplets. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Natoya.
Thanks, Mary.
You are a blogger. blogger at tripletsintribeca.com. I want to get that out there first. But we're going to talk about Child Abuse Prevention Month, signs that we can look for, reporting procedures, that kind of thing. So why don't you start the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what, Mary, before becoming a mother and a mommy blogger and contributor, I actually worked in children's services for several years, where I saw many cases of child abuse and neglect and litigated these cases. So it's something that I know quite a bit about and very passionate about it personally and professionally. And it's such an important topic, and I think that people don't realize how pervasive it is in our society. You know, the stats tell us that 2.9 million cases of child abuse are reported annually. Wow. So it's quite a staggering figure, and those are just the cases that are reported. So, you know, we all need to be on alert for the signs, some of the classic signs, some of the lesser known signs, so that we can all really help to protect children.
Right. So let's go over a few of the more classic signs, and then we'll try to go through some of the lesser known signs that maybe aren't visible, but, you know, are definitely red flags.
Right. Well, I think some of the classic signs that I saw in my cases, bedwetting is a common one. If you become aware of it, either if you're the parent in the home and the child starts to wet the bed, or if you, or somehow you're not in the home, but you're aware that the child is wetting their bed somehow, it's usually a sign of either physical abuse or sexual abuse. It can go either way, but it's something to not overlook, and it's something to be concerned about, and that's considered to be a classic sign of abuse. Okay. Another one is whenever a child is doing, you know, reasonably well, and all of a sudden there's a change in their behavior or performance in school. That's something to certainly be concerned about. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not necessarily abuse. It could be something else traumatizing that's happening in a child's life, but it's definitely something to take very seriously and look at if you're a teacher or if you're a family friend or a relative or even the parent. Another thing that, you know, we see a lot, that I saw a lot certainly in my cases when I would read investigation notes, things that would lead up to an actual case of child abuse, is whenever kids don't want to go home or they're running away from home a lot. Classic signs, again, it definitely indicates that something is wrong in the home. The child is either feeling unsafe or insecure or at the very least unhappy, and it's something that people should be on guard for and look very closely at if you see a child that's behaving in that way.
Let's go to lesser known signs, because I want to also get to the important part of how you report child abuse and neglect, and, you know, what steps you can take if you notice any of these signs. So the lesser known signs that, you know, aren't obvious out there. So what are a couple
definitely
of those?
You know, one huge lesser known that people often misunderstand is whenever you see a child that's overly aggressive, acts out towards adults or other children. You know, we might interpret this as a poorly behaved child, or that this child is a bully and we can't, you know, maybe we're, you know, no one likes this child or something. But oftentimes that child is really just masking some sort of trauma, which can indicate abuse as well. So something to pay attention to. You know, a child that's often absent from school. You know, I had a lot of cases of educational neglect, and I always took them very seriously, and a lot of courts do, because oftentimes if a kid's missing school a lot, sometimes it's because the parent is trying to hide something, perhaps bruises or something else that would tip someone off.
Right. And then the last one, actually, I'll say the last one, because it was actually a headline grabbing case in South Florida a year or so ago. And it was a little girl. It was really a tragic case. But after she, of course, interviewing teachers and neighbors and everything, they all these signs, both classic and lesser known, popped up. And this one was hoarding food. She was going to school and she was on the free lunch program, I think, or free reduced lunch.
Yeah.
And she would just keep it in her desk in school, and the teacher was even interviewed and said, the teacher said, I thought she was just hungry all the time. She was always hungry and always, and kids would, like, her little friend in school would hand her apple or whatever. And so it was one of that's another hoarding food is another sign.
Yeah.
So what do we do if we see it in, you know, in, obviously if you're a teacher, you have a certain, obligation, and it's obviously maybe more common, but if it's even your child's friend that's over, or, you know, something in your neighborhood, what do we do?
Well, you see, in every single state in this country, there is a hotline that allows us all to make reports of child abuse. You know, and every state also has laws now, too, about mandated reporters, because there are certainly people professionally, like teachers, for example, right, doctors, nurses, police officers, even firemen, that come in regular contact with children, and they do see things, and they know things. So, you know, years ago, we had these professionals who wouldn't report things, and that was very difficult because they had information that perhaps the rest of society wouldn't have, or even people who might be associated with the family, like a doctor who would see bruises. So they're called mandated reporters, and they have to report. They have a legal obligation to report signs of child abuse. For the rest of us, we don't have a legal obligation, but I would hope a moral obligation. And in many states in the country, you can actually make reports anonymously.
Okay. So is there? So you say each state has a different hotline that you can report to?
Yes.
1-800 number, essentially.
Yes, it's an 800 number. You can also Google it. It's very easy to get information about reporting these things. And sometimes you can make it anonymously, sometimes not. But what happens in every case is they send out a caseworker to visit the family, and they investigate the allegation. So it's not as though once you make a report, someone's going to go to jail and you're going to ruin the family's life. The state will make an assessment whether or not the allegations are true and actually seek to help the family. That's the first priority for children's services. And then if there's a need to do more, like removing the child, they will do that.
Okay. That was actually my question. Is there a flip side to this where, you know, somebody reports you and then it becomes just this horrible nightmare with, you know, Children's Protective Services, but you're saying it's, you know, it's not so severe as that in terms of a first reporting.
Right.
Is that
unless
correct?
An actual criminal act has happened, there is no jail time whatsoever. And the goal of family services is really to help families. So, for example, we might investigate a family and see that maybe there isn't child abuse, but maybe there is something going on in family and they need additional assistance. Maybe they need food. Maybe they need furniture. Maybe they need counseling.
Right.
It's usually a good idea to get children's services involved if you are concerned about kids.
Right. So can we find information about this at your blog, which is tripletsintribeca.com? Can we find information?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Natoya, for bringing information about a very important, as I said, a difficult but extremely important topic. And when we come back on Mom Talk Radio, we're going to be talking about food. We're going to be talking to a celebrity chef, Ryan Scott. So I hope you're not hungry, because you will be soon. Stay with us.
Even super moms need a little advice. Here's yours. More of Mom Talk Radio.
Are you hungry? If you're not, you're going to be, because we're talking to celebrity chef Ryan Scott. Tips for family dinners, how to make it more fun, and a few easy strategies that seem obvious to him, but not to people like me who don't know how to cook. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Ryan.
It's an honor. Thank you so much. I'm a fan, so this is really cool to be on your show.
Great. Thank you so much. So you're your own radio and TV personality. You own Market and Rye in San Francisco, and you've been all over the new TV, Top Chef, Food Rush, The Talk, The Chew, you name it. So congratulations on a wonderful career so far. And I'm sure it's just, you know, you're still cooking, really going fast, aren't you?
You know, don't write my will yet. I think I'm doing okay. I'm coming in there.
don't stick a fork in you, right?
No. So, that's good. I like that. But
you like that? Did you like that? Okay.
Yeah,
so let's talk about easy tricks for family dinners. Listen, most moms don't know what they're cooking by 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and I am definitely guilty of that. So give us some of the tricks of your trade for moms out there who are really busy, but really, you know, really strive to get a healthy family dinner out.
I think you're literally right. I was with some friends last night here in New York City for dinner, and one of the mothers that I was having dinner with, she's like, Ryan, I get home at 4, and I don't know what I'm going to make. And she's like, it's got to be easy. And I've talked to a lot of people about it. I said, I think the best thing to do, first of all, the average American family out there is dealing with $140 a week to work with when it comes to groceries. Now, you know, spreading that out, getting that, you know, pantry staples, getting all the things the kids like to eat. Maybe the husband only likes to eat chicken breast. The kids like chicken thighs, and nobody likes chicken. They only like shrimp and not fish. You know, there's a lot of requirements to work with these days. Let's build our pantry first, okay? Pantry staples are staples that can last for a long, long time. Things that have lots of good flavor. I love jalapenos, if they're not spicy. Pepperoncinis that are pickled are really delicious. Any vinegars, any mustards, any even having mayonnaise is a great base in your pantry staples too, because mayonnaise is a great coating when doing baked chicken. Having breadcrumbs on hand is another thing, but also having really good canned ingredients. Like, let's get with really great beans, cannellini beans, garbanzo beans. They can go in chilies. You can make vegetarian cakes one night with the beans that are cooked, because classically, cooking beans, you got to soak them, you got to drain them, you got to bring them to a boil, you got to let them sit. It's a pain in the you know what, and nobody
way
wants
too
to
much
deal
work.
With that.
Way too much work.
but there's a lot of great things out there that have a lot of great seasoning already. Okay,
yeah.
Right now I'm in love with Starkist Gourmet Selects. Now there's the pouch tuna that's out there, and they're flavored already. There's Mexican, there's Thai, there's Mediterranean. I was doing a death side yesterday, and I just did little crackers, any kind of cracker you like, salted cucumber, feta cheese. I took the Mediterranean tuna out. I had a snack. It was light. It was delicious.
Things
that are pre-season are going to help you, all of them that are marinated. It just, you know, it's going to add to that one blah dish. And I always say, don't go overboard. Just add another passenger to the ship. You know, just add one more ingredient that you don't usually use. And that changes your repertoire of your food.
These are also kid-friendly, or at least you can make a dish and make it a couple of ways. How do you suggest that?
Okay,
for the kid?
Here's the thing. We're all adults, right? Kids know what they know because you tell them. It's okay to slip a little bit. It's okay that, for instance, I didn't like broccoli when I was a kid. And, you know, now these days I love it because it's my second book that will come out. It's What Daddy Did Wrong. It's all the methods of how things were cooked wrong. And what if I ask you right now, what's the one dish you don't like and you won't eat? I guarantee you have one off the top of your head. It's a childhood memory, right?
Yes, probably. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's pastrami.
Liver and onion. Liver and onion. I remember my dad would love
it. Yeah, liver and onions could be its own state. It literally could. there's so many people that don't like that. But with kids, it's about sneaking in those good things. It's like if you do make a burger, you can make broccoli guacamole instead of guacamole. Do you know that you can make cauliflower steak instead of cauliflower just steamed? There's so many variations. And I always tell people, cook the way you know, like Thanksgiving. Don't ever try to go and pull out a new recipe. Just add one new fun ingredient. So when you're going shopping, add that kohlrabi or that apple that you this new in season. Throw it into a dish. It could be raw, it could be cooked, it could be braised, it could be stewed. It adds sweetness, it's natural, and you're doing good for, you know, your body because you're eating something fresh and in season. I always say, eat what's in the first of the produce section when you walk in. Right now it's berries. You should have berries on your salad, on your granola.
Yes.
You know, you can toss it with goat cheese in a salad. It's just
They're
delicious.
So beautiful, too. They're so beautiful. Yes, they are.
Right.
Berries. Berries are in season, that's for sure. And I like the idea of eating seasonal, eating local, and I'm sure you do too, correct?
Right. But a lot of people always ask, how do I know that? Okay, when you go to a grocery store in winter, the first thing you see is sweet potatoes, pears, and apples. Guess what's in season? Also, what's in season is the least expensive in the produce department. It's funny to think that. If you're paying $9 for a sweet potato off season, it's not seasonal. You know,
Let's
say you got to think that. Whatever's special and good price, that's what's in there.
Right. Absolutely. And you know what? We only have about a minute. I've got to wrap, but I beets were the one thing that was the other thing I hated when I was a kid, but now I love them because they've come up with these just fab. Like you had even said, like goat cheese, throw it in a beet salad and it's so good. And beets, that's one thing I remember hating as a kid, but now that
didn't like beets. Oh, can I
give
you, I know we have 30 seconds. I have a radio show. See, it's a simple thing in the whole world. Wash your beets, get the tops on top of them, toss them in a little bit of rosemary. Even if you have lavender, not the soap in your bathroom, lavender and a little bit of sea salt, wrap them in a foil packet. Make sure the shiny side of the foil is on the inside because that's your insulator.
Okay.
Bake
it
in the oven, low and slow. Bring them out. All will eat them. Done.
Love it. I love it. I love it.
Okay, I know.
Now that's healthy. That's awesome.
Yes.
Chef Ryan Scott. Check him out at ryanscottenterprises.com, and I'm sure you're going to see him all over the TV and radio. So thank you so much for joining us on Mom Talk Radio. And boy, did that hour fly by. We have one more segment left. We're going to be talking to Dr. Charles Musburger, who is a psychiatrist and will offer us insight on self-esteem, self-compassion, and unconditional love. And what are the 4A words? Dr. Musburger will tell us. On this last segment of Mom Talk Radio, we've got a doctor in the house. Dr. Charles Musburger is at southjerseypsychiatry.com. He went to the University of Rome, which I love, medical school, and completed residency at Thomas Jefferson University in Philly. So you're up in the Northeast, Dr. Musburger. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ryan. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I know you're busy. So tell us a little bit. The four A words intrigued me first, so we're going to go a little bit out of order. So what are the four A words that parents and caregivers need to know and why?
Okay. The four A words. I think the four A words are kind of important for parents because of the following reasons. Let me tell you what they are first so there's no mystery.
Okay. Right.
They just happen to be words that start with the letter A. And in this order, they are acknowledgement, acceptance, approval, and affection.
Hmm. Okay.
So those are the four A's. Now, I'm going to give you a little idea why they count, I think. It's a dovetail into the unconditional love piece. So maybe I can try to knock off, you know, two birds here for you.
Right. It sounds like it all works together, right?
It does, yes. Little people, all of us, show up on the planet Earth very dependent. We have to rely on someone for literally everything. Some folks will argue that, you know, birthing itself is pretty traumatic. And then you show up and you have all these needs and you have no ability to take care of them yourself. So it requires someone to provide. Now,
right.
Provide what? Well, there's food, clothing, shelter, and then there are these other things that are pretty essential as well. Now, this is either from a parent, a grandparent, one parent, two parents, mm-hmm. four parents,
right.
An aunt, an uncle, an orphanage, a step parent, whatever. Anyone who's going to be the principal caregiver for the little person.
Right.
We are born, in addition to dependent, with a little aggression, which is important for our needs to be met. It's an interesting blend. And we learn how to fear, unfortunately, when those needs are not forthcoming. And it's a very difficult time because you're not able to process anything, computer chip yet.
Right.
It takes 10 to 15 years before that shows up. So in that interim, you feel everything emotionally, physically, and even viscerally, which is a little bit deeper. Trust is what every child can do from birth. It's another innate ability. It is taken in pieces away when fear occurs based on trauma of any kind, and trauma is in the brain of the beholder, or when a need isn't met directly. And once trust is breached, control is the replacement. And once that happens, a child is on the defensive, and fear becomes the souvenir. And souvenirs like that cause a lot of damage over time. So enter the unconditional love in the A word. Unconditional love is a term that's been around a long time. And I know it's a bit cliche, but I think it's very important. What it means is this, that the love that a child experiences, and there's lots of ways where that experience is felt, again, emotionally and viscerally and so on, provides a little one with a basis, a foundation by which they can build other things upon, other things like healthy curiosity about who they are, what they're about, what they're good at, sometimes even more importantly, what they're not so good at.
Right.
Because they know that the love that they're getting, which means not just their needs met, but there's a genuine caring for their well-being. It becomes a pillar, a constant, that provides the basis for genuine security to take the risks required to go inside yourself and find out what you're good at and what you're not, and then to try to negotiate all of that with the outside world, but knowing that behind you is an unconditional love foundation and base so that your security is secure. And that,
right.
that helps. And the trust remains intact for a little longer, which is really
right.
kind of an important thing. The
so
A
that's
words
really
the
cornerstone is unconditional love. And then the A words. We only have about a minute left. So the A words and how
we all wrap
it together.
All right. I'm trying to talk as fast as I can. The A words are the corners that go on top of the unconditional. If a child learns that they can produce those A words a little bit on their own.
Right.
And again, this is teaching from the parents. That you don't have to come to the parent to get all of it all the time. You start to learn how to produce each one of those A words a little bit more, a little bit more. Whatever you can't produce, I, the parent or the grandparent, will provide you with. But little by little, you're going to learn how to kind of produce these things for yourself. So there's less dependency, ultimately, more trust, less need for control. You can go out into the world from a position of strength, not a position of you know, presumptive weakness.
And you have a compassionate and a child or a young adult that has great self-esteem. So thank you so much, Dr. Musburger. We can go to southjerseypsychiatry.com to find information about this topic.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Great.
Yeah.
We probably need to have you back as well, because we could talk for another hour just about this. So thank you so much for listening to Mom Talk Radio. To all you out there, have a great week getting ready for Mother's Day. As we all know, you can find this show and other past shows at momtalkradio.com. Follow us on facebook.com/mom Talk Radio, and join Maria for another great show next week.